Chapter 9. Fourth Solace. I've just realized I've missed the worst of the summer heat thanks to the Aeroshock's oversized toothpick. If I'm being honest, not a bad trade. Odd thing happened today. Gamelin was here visiting again, which that has been odd enough, for all that I've been glad to see him, even if his concern throughout my whole recovery has been markedly acidic. We were in the library, three layers deep into Bowden's date buns, when all of a sudden Orana knocked and announced Lady Audrey and her son, Stinton Forrester, were here to visit. They live about 7 estates down the way with the extravagantly bitter Lord Willem Forrester and his unkinder mother, and I don't think we've ever spoken to each other in our lives. Anyway, in they came. She was in purple silk, and he had a suit with puffier sleeves than my entire wardrobe. Gamelin was in his work cloth shirt with the seam I mended in pink thread 2 years ago, and I had a grease stain on my pants the shape of Antiva from the time we stumbled into the Raider tripwires in Darktown. I will say the shower of crumbs as I stood to greet them was remarkable, as was Toby's alacrity in removing them from the carpet. After that scintillating beginning, though, I wasn't sure what to do, so we ended up perched on the chairs and staring at each other for a good bit. Eventually, someone ventured a remark on the weather, and someone else responded in kind, and then we were making the insipid small talk I've heard at every one of Mother's parties, and even Gamelin restricted himself to quiet snorts and rolled eyes instead of his usual biting commentary. To be honest, that worried me more than anything else. Lady Audrey was never a great friend of Mother's so far as I knew, but for the solicitousness of her concern over my injuries, I might have thought she and Mother were the closest sisters in Thedas. Endless questions about my comfort, my recovery, endless advice on salves and creams to reduce scarring. Stinton just sat there and stared at me. I don't think he said 10 words. They stayed just long enough to make the room thoroughly uncomfortable, then sailed out in a silk cloud. Stinton smiled at me when Orana came to walk them out. I'd forgotten 2 of his bottom teeth had turned sideways. I haven't the faintest idea what just happened. Later. Gamelin says Stinton intends to court me. I say Gamelin needs to stop drinking the moonshine Joe Mallon makes with goose dung. 11th Solace. Steaming hot. Suppose I haven't missed the summer after all. Stinton's been back to visit 2 times, as have Orwin, Pellery, Derek, Braden, Sage, and every single one of their mothers. Shit. 19th Solace. Stormed hard, but cleared up by mid-morning. Everything marvelously dank, just like it should be. They've set the ceremony to make me the city's champion for the last day of Solace. Stinton's hinted 3 times he'd like to arrive on my arm, or me on his, as I suspect he'd prefer. He's stopped coming with his mother. I wish he'd stop coming at all. He has the most abominable habit of saying my name every few words, as if he wants me to be absolutely certain I have his attention. Feels more like he's trying to piss dominance over a prize bitch. No one's called me that name since Mother died, and even then it was only when I'd been caught making trouble. It's not for you, you pompous prick. Twenty-third Solace. Hot again. Foundry smoke's been drifting over all day. Wish the smell would be kind enough to blow elsewhere. Tired of nightmarish memories. Pellery Ashbridge is entirely too shy to be caught up in this mess. She barely comes up to my shoulder for all that she's over 20, and no matter how her maid dresses her in cashmere and taffeta, she still seems like a girl forced too far too soon. The only time I've ever really seen her smile was when I told her about the time Carver and I stole a sackful of unripe pears from Barlin and were sick for 3 days afterwards. Of course, that only lasted until her mother, the most dour woman in Thedas, pinched out a smile and said something about how all children must learn to be ladies eventually, and Pellery's smile fell off her face like an anchor had been tied to it. Joke's on her, though. I was 19 when we did it. She certainly didn't care for my pointing that out, especially given my glee in the doing. Pellery smiled again, though, so I suppose it was worth the spite. Flames. But I wish these idiots would stop using their children as leverage. For all Mother's faults, she never once tried to sell me for profit. 27th Solace. If I imagine hard enough, I can almost convince myself the city's beginning to cool. If the hand is shakier than usual, it's because I'm laughing hard enough I can barely breathe. We came home... and Drosty's glorious girdle. I've got to get through the setup before the punchline, but the delay might very well kill me. We were out on the coast today for Aveline, rooting out some smugglers who've been peddling Canary detritus at a tidy profit. First real fight since the aeroshock. Did fairly well, all things considered. Man is still a trifle weak, so some of the firestorms from Relic Fire trickles, but the battle ended with them dead and me only with a cracked shin, so all in all, resounding victory so far as I'm concerned. Invited everyone over to celebrate, naturally, but Sebastian was already pushing late for Chantry services, and Aveline had dinner plans with Donnick, so in the end it was just Fenris and me walking back to Hightown together. I don't think I've mentioned this, but I told him about those fool visits at Wicked Grace last week. He hadn't laughed like I'd thought, just gone... quiet, I suppose, is the best word for it. Friend at his cards for three hands and lost every coin he came with, then excused himself early. I hadn't meant to go after him. Maker knows his running wouldn't thank me for the chase. But I saw him fiddling with that damned red band on his way out, and knew right where his mind had gone. Caught up to him right outside the door. It was cool for solace, I remember, because his northern arms had gone to goose flesh in the chill, and he'd actually shivered when I'd touched his shoulder to turn him. Wouldn't meet my eyes, either, for all he stayed put, and it wasn't until I reached around and tucked my fingers around his wrist, the wrapped one, that he came back to a little life. I don't remember exactly what I said. More than I should have. I'm fairly certain I offered to start hanging paint buckets above doors at his druthers, but it only garnered the slightest smile until I stepped a hair too near and he moved just a bit too close, and all at once, I had nothing to say. All this time, and that was all it took. The slightest lean in instead of away, and my heart leapt so high in my throat I could hardly breathe. I told him I wasn't going anywhere. I didn't say anything else. I didn't know what else to say, but he looked up when I said it, and that uncertain smile shifted into something a little deeper, and then he closed his eyes and his forehead came up against mine for just a moment or two, just long enough for a breath that took 1,000 years with it on the exhale. He left after that, and I didn't try to keep him. Funny, I don't feel like finishing this now. I'll come back to it another time. Later. All right, I'm 3 shots of Antivan liquor and most of rotisserie chicken in, so let's get on with this. We came home from the coast, is the short of it. It was easy enough between us after that conversation, so I wasn't thinking about much, just enjoying the walk. And then we came in, and who should be sitting in one of those over-tall embroidered chairs in my library but Lord Stinton fucking Forrester in orange and ivory silk and slashed sleeves. His face! Oh, Maker and his bride, I'm crying at the thought of it. That pristine little suit, and in we come covered in blood and mud and sand with Fenris picking sinew out of his cuirass. Might as well have struck him upside the head with a frying pan. Gaping isn't a strong enough word. I started laughing the moment I saw him. Couldn't help it, too absurd, and managed to struggle through an introduction while shaking bone bits out of my hair. Stinton barely got out a stuttering hello, looking at me the whole time like I was quite alien. But Fenris! That insufferable, magnificent ass! Gave such a deliberate flourish of his sword before sheathing it and sending the whole massive thing one-handed against the wall. Then he gave Stinton the most Tevinter half-bow that managed to signify more disrespect than a formal Kirkwall snubbing ever could, and I had to bite down on my tongue to check the giddiness. Even that would have been enough, but then Arana, and make her bless every bone in her body, for I think she dislikes Stinton as much as I do, came in with a bowl and a handful of rags the way she always does when we come home covered in gore, and kept a gloriously bland smile on her face the whole time we wiped off the worst of the blood. She even asked how many we'd killed this afternoon, which she hardly ever does, and pretended it was a perfectly normal thing when Fenris answered her with 16. It was possibly the most Tevinter-esque conversation they've ever had in front of me, and my heart's still singing for it. Anyway. This continued on in the same vein for several minutes, Stinton looking nervously between the two of us, until there was an unfortunate lull, whereupon Stinton took it upon himself to ask how long Fenris had been serving in my household. Oh, journal, but I bristled. Fenris hardly seemed concerned, resigned only, which I hated just as much, but I kept my temper enough to inform him quite frostily that he was a dear friend and had been so for years, and I had been honored to fight in his company today. Which was all true, though I haven't the faintest idea who was more surprised between the two of them. Stinton didn't stay much longer after that. He looked as though he wanted to speak to me privately, but the void would have to tear open my library before I'd ask Fenris to leave it for Stinton's sake. He left within a few minutes of Arana carrying away the bloody bowl. I wasn't sorry to see him go. Then it was just Fenris and me left, in a silence that ought to have been awkward, but wasn't. Instead, it was just comfortable, the both of us tired after the fight and that fool and willing to forget them as fast as we could. I asked him if he'd come with me to the ceremony. As a friend, if you wanted, but I said I'd like to have him there. He didn't answer for a long time. Then he said no, which didn't surprise me, but he looked sorry to say it, which did. He said he'd make a poor showing in dented, stained armor, and he hadn't time to get new things. I said I wouldn't care in the least. It was him I wanted there, not his clothes, which made him laugh, even if it didn't change his mind. He said it would be a bad idea to draw attention to himself, given both Daenerys and the fact that he's still squatting in that rotting mansion. I couldn't argue with that. So, he left, and I'm left to Varric and Sebastian as my only acceptable escorts. Not that I don't, but, well, the last few words are scratched out. I knew it was a long shot. Well, nothing to be done about it now. It's still a wonderful thing to see Stinton slinking out like the weasel he is. 29th Solace. The day before my doom is fittingly dreary. Felt bad all morning over mocking Stinton to his face yesterday. Sent a note to him this afternoon asking him to come by for a few minutes so I could apologize. He accepted it, ungraciously as it was given, which made me feel even worse. Right up until the point where he told me he'd be happy to continue his attentions toward me only if, A, I stop trouncing around with Kirkwall on savories, B, I tone down my use of magic, so difficult to overlook when I keep throwing it in people's faces, C, I dismiss the elf from my service, not certain if he means Fenris or Arana, though given his sneer, I suspect the former, D, I stop permitting Lady Ashbridge to bring Pellery to visit, and Orwyn and Brayden and the rest, no matter how gentle Pellery is when her mother's not crushing her under her heel. I'm not often stunned speechless, and I'm pleased to say that this was no exception. I've forgotten exactly what I said, but I know at one point I used the phrase barbaric balking boar, and was fairly pleased with myself. His face turned all sorts of colors, but ended a mottled red, and when I was finished, he turned and walked right out the door without waiting for Arana. Burned that bridge right to the ground, I suppose. Good riddance to bad rubbish. 30th Solace. Cold. Gray. Blustery. Blah. Arana's been at me for hours with more perfumes and salts than a magister's bathhouse. Just put me in the damned dress and let me go. No one who likes me will be there except Aveline anyway, and she's seen me naked and covered in mud. That was one memorable trip up Sundermount, I'll tell you that. She's coming at me with a fistful of gold pins for my hair. Make her save me. Later. The carriage is at the door. I can hear its squeaking wheels, and Sebastian's just come in the foyer. I can hear his voice from here. I asked Arana if I could pretend to be dead, and she said she didn't think the ruse would take. Damn her. I snuck the journal in my useless clutch. Serves her right. I'm drowning in poorly scented sweat, and Stinton keeps sneering at me across the floor. Pellery's here, though, and I'm determined to dance with her at least once to get her mother off her back. Sebastian's been a darling to take my temper, and he looks marvelous in russet and white and gold. Plus, he knows the dances, which makes me look a good deal better. He's dancing with the oldest Alancourt girl now. I've wasted him off to spare him from me a while. She's sweet, if a bit dim, and guaranteed not to snap when he offers her a canapé. Music's changing again. How much longer? Ceremony's done, but I can't leave yet. Snuck off to some fainting room and locked the door. Cullen of the Templary Curls offered to escort me to get some cooler air, but I said I'd rather avoid any surreptitious branding, which I think genuinely shocked him. Meredith didn't seem to hear for all she's been staring at me all evening, so I suppose I should count myself lucky and shut my mouth. Aveline's here. She's in uniform, but it might as well be a golden gown for how adoringly Donick's watching her. Lucky thing. Too many people all together, all looking at me. Orsino, Meredith, Cullen, Elthena, even Bran showed up and brought me a champagne flute. I asked if it was poisoned. He looked at me sourly and said if he'd meant to poison me, he'd have done it when I was still the vagabond refugee fumbling with a wineglass in the Viscount's office. People keep knocking. Told them to go away, but I guess I can't have fainted then. Sebastian says I can leave in half an hour. The champion of Kirkwall gets an iron circlet and a medal on a piece of paper in the mail. The medal's in the clutch, but there's not much to do for this damn circlet. My forehead's going to be dented for weeks. Later. It's almost 3 a.m, but I'm finally home. The candle's nearly out, so I'll keep this brief as I can, but Fenris came. It was just for a few minutes, so quick I might have blinked and missed it. I stepped out for the last time. The Viscount's garden's back up right against the Great Hall, and there was a wonderful shrubbery thing and a great brown pot that hid me marvelously in the shadows, even with the crimson satin. Only this time I stepped out, and there was already someone behind it. I will say, I repressed the scream admirably. I can't say I didn't stumble back with the most ignominious trip into the gravel I've ever had, except the shadow reached out and caught me. Maker. I've been right besotted. Knew him as soon as I felt his hand. Knew the calluses well enough, certainly, but the lyrium I'd recognize blind and deaf and dying. He stood me on my feet and I looked at him and... Sometimes, in Lothering, Bethany and I would go out to the creek that ran behind our fields. There was a wild hydrangea bush there, taller than the two of us together, and in the last days of spring we'd find the little buds and Bethany would coax them with her magic to see if she could get them to bloom. She was much better than I was at it. I tended to get impatient and wither them instead, and most of the time they'd only open a bit, only slivers of brilliant purple peeking out between waxy green sheaths. Sometimes, though, sometimes, if everything was perfect, she'd thread her magic into the leaves and I could see it take, could see the leaves growing and greening and beginning to furl away, and the bud would swell and swell and swell until all at once the bloom would burst open, in perfect silence, and a glorious purple blossom larger than my head sat in her curled fingers. They were beautiful, and I... That happened in my heart when I saw him. Silent and sudden and beautiful and overwhelming, and there was no going back after it opened. He wasn't in his armor. He'd found a dress tunic, to Vintern style, high-collared, but with long sleeves that gathered snug at his wrists, and black trousers that fit him beautifully, and I'd never felt so near crying from gladness in my life. I don't know where he found them. I don't care. He said he couldn't stay, that the guards would only ignore so much, even while on their way to drunk, but he misliked the idea that his fear of Daenerys might control him even now. He said he knew I needed no protection from fools, like Stinton implied, but if I needed refuge from their mothers... I shouldn't have hugged him, but I did, and I don't regret it. He held me back. So he couldn't have hated it that much. I told him he was the best thing I'd ever seen. He had told me I was beautiful, and he didn't let go of me until I'd pulled away first. Lady Everlyn came out only a few seconds later with Brayden at her heels. There wasn't much more to the moment, but he was still watching me when I stepped away to keep him hidden. I told him he'd be standing up with me next time, not hiding behind a bush. He said, but he was smiling when he did. The candle's long out. I've been writing by mage light for 20 minutes. I'd better stop before Arana ties me down with my own bedsheets. I'm determined that there will be a next time. If nothing else, I need to see him in those trousers in proper light, not in the shadow of a shrubbery. He came for no reason other than I wished him to, and he's kind, even if he doesn't want anyone to know. If he's trying to make me forget him, he's gone the wrong way about it. My face is so flushed, the damned iron circlet feels like ice. He said I was beautiful.